right, welcome into Surviving Paradise, the podcast that takes a sometimes serious, oftentimes humorous look at the claim by Jehovah's Witnesses that they are living in a modern-day spiritual paradise. I am your host, Stacy Bauman, former elder, ministerial servant. Most importantly, a kid, a little guy raised as one of Jehovah's Witnesses in the 1970s and 1980s, rapidly becoming a unique generation in their history, as I do each week here. I just want to warn everyone, we try to have fun. There's sarcasm, humor. There's a lot of smart-ass comments and my own brand of experiences and how I share them. Please know we want you to stay, and it's never meant to offend. Just a new voice in the crowd, an ever-growing crowd of ex-Jehovah's Witnesses who are hopeful that something here helps someone think. It's going to be hard to beat last week. So many changes in God's organization here on the earth. Am I the only one who over the past 5 to 6 days has been sitting back picturing Goodwill Industries, the Goodwill stores here in the United States, getting overrun with a sudden supply, a huge inventory of neckties, suits, and dresses? I couldn't help but think, after the big news from the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, Goodwill has probably never seen so many business casual outfits land in their bins as over the last couple weeks, as Jehovah's Witnesses now feature women wearing pants and men in open collar shirts. God, it's a good time to be alive. I'm very open on this show about my love for all things psychology. I'm fascinated, endlessly fascinated, I should say, by what makes us all tick. And for that reason, I've always studied the concept of leadership. It fascinates me. It's so nuanced. It's also incredibly powerful. I've dug deep into what makes a great leader and what makes other people, despite being good people, actually ineffective as leaders. What's the difference? I've really dug into it. For that reason, I've studied the business leadership concept of VUCA, V-U-C-A. If you're not familiar with that acronym, it's a leadership style employed by those in high-end managerial or business leadership roles, and the acronym stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. Leaders of organizations must be able to quickly and efficiently identify opportunities and threats to make the best decisions for their organizations. And that requires a leader in any walk of life to be familiar and have the ability to identify patterns. When you're in charge of profits and growth, it's essential that you recognize the coming VUCA, the volatility, the chance for uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. And to effectively do so, you have to be a student of patterns. From the article Benefits and Tricks of a Power Skill, Seeing Patterns, from September 21st, 2022, by Paytech Kabaki, I hope I am saying her name correctly, we get this quote. Robert C. Barkman, PhD, stated, "When you see a pattern, it can change your life. Seeing a pattern can even make you smarter. Recognizing a pattern is like looking through a telescope for the first time. As if with new eyes, you see things you have never seen before." End quote. Mankind, humans, including this podcast host, has always found some strange comfort in patterns. And look, I'm pretty open about being a guy who deals with OCD. I'm a little high strung. I'm type A. We know what is coming, though, with a pattern. We know what's coming next. It doesn't take much to look back at man's history and see that the greatest advancements have all involved set patterns. Ancient civilizations learned to tell time by looking at the patterns in the sky. Others, arguably, depending on where you land on all things alien visitors and more, were able to build incredible monuments, including the Egyptian and Mayan pyramids. All of it incorporating patterns. I've gone on and on about how much I hate math on this show, because I do, and yet mathematics is a complex pattern that runs our lives. On a simple level, if you're just a young person listening in, video games often involve patterns, including where an enemy will spawn next. And for those of us old enough to remember, how about that game Simon? You remember Simon? The blinking light game that was all based on recognizing patterns? Where would the red blink? Where would the green blink? Boom, boom, boom. And how about poker? Any poker players out there? How about those that like going to the beach? High tide versus low tide. I could keep going, but you get the idea. Patterns are all around us, and recognizing them is often critical to our lives. You might even say to our happiness. And certainly that holds true when it comes to people in leadership positions. Our brains are very, very good. We're actually created to see patterns. The ability to see a pattern is a result of the brain's natural tendency to find order in chaos. This is how we make sense of the world. This is how we learn in the process. The ability to find patterns is also critical for survival, for it is what allows us to identify potential threats and opportunities. And as you might guess, all of this goes upward, particularly to leaders. And most important to our brains is this fact. Recognition of patterns gives us a sense of control. In a world that, let's face it, oftentimes seems completely out of control. I mentioned chaos. I love that word. But we know the sun is coming up. And frankly, let's be honest, that feels good. It feels real good. So ingrained in the human brain is this desire, dare I say, comfort in all things patterns, that we will look for patterns when they don't even exist. And this is just brand new news to me. This condition is called apophenia, the perception of meaningful patterns in any unrelated information. Anybody out there suffer from apophenia like I do? I only recently learned this. Have you ever laid back and stared at the clouds in the sky only to swear you see a face or a dragon or a monster? Or how about looking at the clock at 5:55 at the same time every day or 11:11? Our brain is trained to see this stuff. We seek patterns in almost everything we do in life. But back to the idea of patterns and how they affect those in leadership positions. Leaders must recognize patterns to lead effectively. Tapping into the research and the article I mentioned earlier, seeing patterns makes life more predictable for the leader. By understanding how things are related, the leader can anticipate what is next. This allows the leader to prepare for difficulties and opportunities ahead of time, which helps him or her to better deal with them if they arise. Control admits the chaos. Additionally, by recognizing patterns, the leader can develop insights regarding people or situations, which can help him or her make predictions about future behaviors or outcome. In other words, it's a big, big job. Considering all of us, including anyone leading other people, are imperfect, we're flawed. Even when you think you see a pattern, you may be suffering from apophenia. You're just making a pattern based on some random data. We all put our pants on one leg at a time in this world. And by the way, now, that also includes you sisters, right? You too wear pants. But it speaks to the responsibility of someone in a leadership position, and nowhere on earth, dare I say the universe, is that truer than when you claim Almighty God and His Son Jesus were in the shopping aisle known as planet Earth, just looking for a faithful slave, and they landed on you. You guys in upstate New York, way back in 1919. As a reminder from the printed literature of Jehovah's Witnesses, the Watchtower of 2013, July 15th on page 22, we are reminded of this, quote, "The faithful and discreet slave, a small group of anointed brothers, no girls allowed, who are directly involved in preparing and dispensing spiritual food during Christ's presence. Today, these anointed brothers make up the governing body, end quote. I think we can all agree that these are the most important nine men in all the earth. Just ask them. They remind us that our eternal lives are in their hands and that obeying them is a life or death matter, even when they have really weird facial expressions and some new, really ugly beards. Incidentally, will someone please at this point volunteer to send Mark Sanderson some beard oil? Does he even know what that is? That thing on his face is not looking good. It's just not looking good, in my opinion. Somebody offer to teach him what beard oil is. But it continues from the Watchtower of 2011, July 15th, page 24, in the simplified English edition of the Tower. We are told, quote, "We need to obey the faithful and discreet slave to have Jehovah's approval," end quote. Sounds serious, does it not? If we don't obey those nine guys, Jehovah doesn't like us. The governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses are the appointed leaders in charge of every living, breathing soul on this planet. And while I personally, after many years of watching them and being a dub, find them to be a little slow when it comes to recognizing patterns, there's no question they're cluing into them in recent years. I know, someone's brain might be firing and thinking, wait a minute, Stacy, doesn't the creator of patterns, Jesus Christ himself, recognize patterns pretty quickly? It's a good question. Yes, I would say, one would think so. But we've been assured that nine flesh and blood men will be telling us what patterns to recognize to begin with. And not only do they seem to recognize patterns, again, albeit slowly, I think it's very important, or maybe it's just fun. Maybe it's just flat out fun at this point to take a closer look at their patterns, at their VUCA. What are they doing over and over and over again to see if we can make some bold predictions on what might be coming next when it comes to new light? I know this is a bold stance to take in this episode. It's bold. Jesus said that no one knew the day or the hour, not even him, just Jehovah. But at this point, I'm going to make some bold predictions. I'm going out on a limb. So let's have some fun. Let's have some fun this week. It's been intense as of late. And fun is, it's kind of a loose definition of what follows. Like anyone listening, you've probably spent far too much time contemplating what the fine nine may do next. What Jesus will tell them to do next. Here is a collection of my new light predictions based on the patterns I myself have come to realize in the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. And I'm only going to take two or three because I could go on and nobody wants that. And please note, these are my observations on patterns. I'd love to hear or read everyone else's opinions. Thanks again for the DMs, posts on YouTube, and the like. I'm watching closely. I'm watching the governing body closely. And since 2023, it looks like they're getting new light, wouldn't you say roughly every 5 to 6 months now? It's really picked up. I believe these rapid patterns of change coming from the Jesus Christ of the Bible to New York are a result of hemorrhaging members. I said it. I in no way, shape, or form, if you can't see through my dripping sarcasm, believe that any of this comes from the Christ of the Bible or even a supernatural being watching on from the heavens. These changes are coming rapidly because I believe Jehovah's Witnesses are hemorrhaging members, and not just any members, but the most important members, younger generations of Jehovah's Witnesses. The millennial and Gen Z generations are far more critical. They're far more investigative in many ways, and it hurts to say this as one who's not part of them, they're more studious, and they will look with the goal of finding what the motives are behind recognized patterns. And for that, I really have a lot of respect for the younger generations. But as a member of Gen X, and again, I love my generation, I can tell you that we mostly obeyed. And we spent many sleepless nights burying our doubts and our questions. For those of us that stayed in well past childhood and the teenage years and became adult Jehovah's Witnesses, we just tried to choke out our doubts. But the younger generations don't do that. They've taken a look at recent patterns and they've said something isn't right. And Jehovah's Witnesses have seen a monumental, sharp increase in younger generations exiting the religion. First, I want to say that I see a pattern of the governing body leaning into something that should have been the case all along. Using your own conscience. It's a conscience matter. Remember how popular that phrase was, even when it really wasn't a conscience matter? I believe this will be a phrase we will hear a lot more moving forward. You could sort of sense it in the last couple big-time meetings with the governing body, the annual meeting, and then the governing body update number 2. As they, in my opinion, lean into one of Jesus' foundation teachings during his visit to earth, using your own head. I firmly believe that almost all the no-nos that robbed many of us of a normal childhood back in the day will now become a conscience matter. So I won't here just unpack every single one of them. But I have a few pet favorites that I believe are coming rapidly. I think it'll be changed within 2024. I mentioned this a little bit last week. In the corporate world, when leadership recognizes a pattern of discontent among its employees and people start quitting or leaving the company, that employer, that company starts handing out perks. We've all seen it if you've been around for any amount of time. Suddenly, the employees get free coffee. They get to work from home. They get a shorter work week. They get an extra week of vacation or an extra couple of holidays. When Jesus and his 9 guys in New York recognized the same pattern of discontent with people hanging on tight to their paradise fantasy, they too do what every leader does. They hand out perks. The governing body retention program includes beards, women in pants, and men without neckties and suits. For the older generation employee, publisher, it includes you handling your own baptized minor child that you created, with a little help from them, of course, or allowing you to greet a disfellowshipped relative and invite them to the Kingdom Hall after years of not even speaking to them and pretending they were dead. And in my opinion, all of these perks are a response to patterns. And they're easy to hand out because none of the perks, these things that they've been handing out over the last 6 months, none of them weaken their claim to authority. And by extension, you'll note that nothing they've done so far weakens the basic teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses. They really haven't done anything monumental, folks. They gave people common sense perks, stuff that would make them happier to attend meetings at the Kingdom Hall. And despite many of us saying for decades that many of their rules, particularly confining our social development or our lives, seeing the Bible had zero patterns or any basis for much of what they took away from us, I believe they're going to abruptly move away from their hard and fast rules surrounding things that don't include the Trinity, hellfire, interfaith, anything with interfaith or false religion, and of course more along those lines. And looking at recent perk patterns, I don't think I'm going out on a limb to say the next round of New Light will include changes to many cultural rules. Those are the easiest things to give back. And so I predict, and as we are already seeing, it's not like I'm a genius, they are doing it. Their patterns suggest to me that they're going to walk back. Are you ready for this? This is my number one prediction. in 2024 for our next round of new light. They're going to walk back. Scratch that. Jesus Christ of the Bible is going to walk back his hardline stance on birthdays. I said it. I doubt I'm alone. The birthday ban among Jehovah's Witnesses has never made a bit of sense. I have spent far too many hours contemplating how ignorant and stupid the original leadership of this organization had to be to outlaw birthdays, while at the same time gleefully allowing anniversaries. As if anything there makes a bit of sense. See past episodes on birthdays and the wedding and all things pagan and stuff. If you ever wanted to peek into the unintelligent minds of the original groups of men leading this organization known as Jehovah's Witnesses, please take some time to take a look at birthdays. And it's going to be so easy for them to hand out more of a conscience matter stance on birthdays as a perk moving forward, mainly because they have to know at this point just how stupid it is. I moved birthdays way up my list of new light predictions for 2024 because, well, sticking to the pattern, they've already decided to let men grow hair on certain parts of their body. So what's next? Let's give them birthdays. This one is easy for a really big, big reason in my mind. And I want to underline this point. Again, just my opinion. The reason I think this one is easy for them to get back is because by backtracking on all things like birthdays or the birthday ban, guess what you can't be? You can't be sued. There won't be any litigation. There's going to be a lot of pissed off Jehovah's Witnesses. There's going to be people my age and even well younger who are really chapped about missing their birthday celebrations as a kid and even as an adult. But you can't exactly go to a lawyer and sue the organization. It'll be more of a Cry Me a River situation. So I think that's one of the biggest reasons that as we look forward to 2024, they are going to back up. They're going to walk back the birthday ban. And why? Because it's easy to give, it's stupid, and because they can't be sued for it. I also believe that allowing birthdays as a conscience matter soon is due to their insultingly stupid reasons why most of us were sent to the library during elementary school while our classmates got to eat cake. Ugh, am I the only one that got sent to the hallway or the library? God, those are brutal, traumatic memories for JW kids. You already feel weird, but now you can't even participate in your classmate's birthday, even though he or she really wants you to. And they pretend and say things like, just pretend it's not a birthday cake. It's not a birthday cupcake. I really like you. I want you to stay. Off to the library you go. I could generally make an entire episode on the birthday ban, but I'll stick to a few reasons that Jehovah's Witnesses, and again, as I do, particularly kids, are told that they can't celebrate birthdays. Much like beards and pants and saying hi to a fellow sinner, the pattern of how they reason and what they will give up and give back is glaringly apparent to me. The governing body has told Jehovah's Witnesses that they can't celebrate birthdays up till this moment for the following reasons. Most of us know these, but in review. There are only two birthday parties mentioned in the Bible, and in both, somebody died. In keeping with their death theme, the day of death, we're told, is better than the day of birth, according to Ecclesiastes 7:1, a verse that is actually only commenting on leaving a good legacy behind. Then there's the fact that Jesus never mentions celebrating his birthday. Can you imagine? He also never mentioned shaving. Let's not go there. Sort of like he never mentioned a governing body or an organization. Let's not go there, but don't let that stumble you. Also, witnesses can't celebrate birthdays because Jews didn't celebrate birthdays. They did, however, kill people for picking up sticks on a Sunday. And finally, birthdays are pagan. Kind of like the short haircuts most Jehovah's Witness men are wearing. But again, let's not go there. Don't let that stumble you. But if that wasn't enough, How about a word from our nine guys in New York who put the following to print in the Keep Yourselves in God's Love Book, chapter 13, pages 151 and 152, in a special highlighted box called Holy Days and Satanism. The quote is this, quote, "It is of interest to note that the most important day in the religion called Satanism is one's birthday. Why? Because Satanists hold that each individual is a god if he chooses to view himself as one. Thus, to celebrate one's own birthday is to celebrate the birth of a god. Of course, most people do not take such an extreme, egotistical view." Thanks for noticing. Nevertheless, the book, The Lore of Birthdays, states, "Other holidays lift the heart, but birthdays warm the ego," end quote. That's right, folks. In my earliest of early predictions, I believe birthday ban and all things birthday will be walked back, but it's not without an interesting history. Your egomaniac 8-year-old sees himself as a god after all. But that's nothing. When his 5 friends come over, they play pin the tail on the donkey, give him some new Legos as a gift, and eat some cake. They're actually participating in satanic rituals. Did you know? Thank you. Keep Yourselves in God's Love Book, chapter 13. There it is. The absurdity and stupidity of the birthday ban currently in place, I predict soon to be removed by the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. And if you don't believe any of that, and I want to go on record and say that I don't, how about one of those famous real person experiences meant to convince anyone reading the literature that Jehovah's Witness kids are supremely happy, balanced little people, and they don't believe they're missing out on anything by not going to a birthday party? Are you up for a story? Here we go. From The Secret of Family Happiness, page 102, the box, "He did not feel deprived." I wonder where this is going. We get the following experience that cannot be corroborated. Quote, "Christian parents Paul and his wife Luann organize gatherings at their home from time to time. They make sure that the gatherings, are well supervised and of a manageable size. They have good reason to believe that their children benefit." Luann relates, "The mother of a classmate of my 6-year-old son, Eric, approached me to say that she felt sorry for Eric because he sat apart and didn't join in class birthday parties. I said to her, 'I really appreciate that you care about my son that way. It says a lot about the kind of person you are. And probably there is nothing I could say that would convince you that Eric doesn't feel that he's missing out.'" I can hear the collective groans of anyone listening to this that's been through this as a kid in Jehovah's Witnesses. Back to the quote in experience, she agreed. So I said, "Then please, for your own sake, set your mind at ease and ask Eric yourself how he feels." When I was not around, she asked Eric, "Don't you mind missing out on these nice birthday parties?" He looked up at her, surprised, and said, "Do you think that 10 minutes, a few cupcakes, and a song make a party? You should come to my house and see what a real party is like." The boy's innocent enthusiasm made it clear. He did not feel that he was deprived or missing out, end quote. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Do you all remember those awesome parties we all had at home as Jehovah's Witnesses? Boy, could we throw a party where no one could attend but other Jehovah's Witness kids from our local congregation, where we played Bible trivia or reenacted our own dramas from the Bible. We did get to wear costumes. We didn't miss out on Halloween. Or how about sitting around singing kingdom songs together? We knew how to party. No word from young Eric because, well, let's face it, with these experiences, Eric probably doesn't exist. But I have to tell you, and it's there in print, please go read it. When is the last time you heard a 6-year-old boy speak this way? and answer a grown adult with, quote, "Do you think that 10 minutes, a few cupcakes, and a song make a party? You should come to my house and see what a real party is like." End quote. Sure. Sure, governing body. That sounds like a six-year-old little boy, all right. Thanks for the story. But peering deep into the only literature written with Holy Spirit, I'm reminded of comments such as this one. The Awake of January 8th, 2000, page 27, where we're told, quote, "Although there may be reason to examine the origin of a particular custom, you know, like birthdays, quote, in some cases, it is more important to consider what the custom means to people at the time and in the place where one now lives." End quote. Wait a minute. Do you mean to tell me that five-year-old Susie, who's having a birthday party, isn't thinking about Pharaoh, Herod, or even Satan himself as her best friends sing happy birthday to her? No way, governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, you don't say. She isn't contemplating such things. She isn't picturing John the Baptist getting his head removed. You're kidding me. Miraculously, I predict, the governing body will decide that blowing out candles and eating cake at birthday parties, and I think it happens in 2024, doesn't suddenly remind any children wearing party hats of John the Baptist being beheaded. Kids are weird that way. They're just weird that way. They're at a party. There's music. There's sweets. There's presents. And there's their best friends. They like to laugh. They like to play. They like to open presents. But if they need the reminder, they can always revisit the book published by the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society called Jesus, the Way, the Truth, the Life, where they get the illustration in full color of a woman walking with John's head on a silver platter. Happy birthday! It's all very encouraging. It's all very encouraging. And kids are exposed to it. That's why they are told they can't do birthdays as of now. But if none of that convinced you, my own take on these patterns and this pattern of change, I'm sure the governing body's reasoning on only two birthdays mentioned in the Bible and bad things happening at both makes perfect sense to you, right? You don't see where they can maybe walk that one back when they put, I don't know, four more brain cells to the matter? You see, fire can be used by arsonists to burn down buildings. Did you know that? So you can never have a campfire when you go camping. Fires are bad. There you have it. The intense and Holy Spirit-directed reasoning of the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. Two birthdays, two guys died. Never mind the millions of other birthdays not mentioned where everyone had a good time. We're going to focus on those. But when it comes to Christianity a la carte, the governing body, let's face it, they're the masters. And it's my belief that in coming months, not years, I really believe at this point we're looking at months, they are going to continue to rip off the Band-Aid and allow Jehovah's Witnesses to actually use their brains. Check that. Consciences on all things birthdays. Much like the beard ban that none of us saw coming, no one could have imagined Jehovah's Witness men would have beards this year. I really believe that the birthday ban is about to bite the dust. If you're a Jehovah's Witness, get ready to experience the joy, and I mean to tell you, it is joyful, of seeing your child smile with their family and friends on one special day that's all theirs every year. If your conscience allows, because it's coming. Birthday ban. That's my number one thing at this point that I think the governing body is going to give back as a perk to Jehovah's Witnesses, and the pattern seems to be going that way, at least from where I sit. And now how about my second round of incoming new light that will hit all Jehovah's Witnesses in the very near future? I believe the governing body is slowly loosening their grips. How do I say this? It's really weird, but on your own bodies. your own bodies, our own bodies. We've all seen the celebration on social media of Jehovah's Witnesses hugging and cheering that they can let hair grow now on certain parts of their bodies. I'm even seeing photographs in the last week of sisters lined up in what looks like a chorus line in the front of the Kingdom Hall by the stage, all smiling and wearing pants. And they're so, so excited about it. Grown men they've likely never met gave them permission to wear pants, and it is a matter of celebration. Photos are popping up of bearded brothers sporting the look of men who've won life's biggest lottery with the lifting of the suit and tie requirements Jesus instituted during the last century. You're seeing guys with beards and no neckties. Where am I right now? But in my opinion, when it comes to our bodies, our physical being, and them giving perks in a pattern that's becoming well established, all of those things may be child's play. Since body hair has been a hot topic in heaven, what about your very own skin, you ask? I asked, and I'll continue to ask. That's right. My second prediction on all things new light coming soon to a Kingdom Hall near you is I think tattoos and body piercings, long pictured in Watchtower illustrations as identifying a worldly person, will suddenly, without explanation, be a conscience matter. And I can hear people now saying, well, it kind of is already. I know people that have tattoos. Folks, I can only tell you this. Tattoos are not looked on as a good thing among Jehovah's Witnesses, and certainly neither are body piercings. When you're ripping off the Band-Aid, figuratively speaking, why not do it physically speaking? Ink will be in among those marked for survival into a paradise earth, and I believe it will be soon. It's another one of these perks that people that lead an organization can give to a toxic work environment, dare I say, discontented publishers who are handing out their literature. It's an easy one. They're not going to get sued. Again, tattoos, at least in my time, were always seen as rebellious and worldly. It definitely marked you as worldly, and the proof's in the pudding. You'll see it in some past episodes here in some of the social media posts and certainly in the literature, which is where you should truly go to look. You don't need me to go see this stuff. You'll find that whenever they wanted to picture a worldly person, in the past they had a beard and they would have a tattoo. We're 50% of the way there in terms of perks and patterns. They were always seen as something bad. And the governing body and leadership always leaned into some of the messaging in the Mosaic Law in the Old Testament. You remember the same law Jesus himself had said was done away with when he showed up. That's right. He said you don't need to follow it anymore. They then turn, that being the governing body, at least up till this moment, to Leviticus 19:28 of the New World Translation, where they say, quote, "You must not make cuts in your flesh for a dead person, and you must not make tattoo markings on yourselves. I am Jehovah," end quote. Incidentally, for those who are in the know, the verse right before verse 28, verse 27, and part of the Mosaic Law as well, actually commanded worshipers of Jehovah to never trim their beards. Wait a minute. It was in the Bible you had to have a beard and you couldn't trim it? True story, it was there the whole time. That's right, they were actually required to keep their beards. But the very next verse, the one I just quoted in verse 28, on tattoos, piercing, or any body art, well, that got all the attention. And it got all the obedience. And it still does with many. Certainly, I know there are some, as we'll talk about, that are hiding them. And I personally think that this is another one of those things that they will ditch at their earliest convenience. It's so easy to give something like this back. they were out of line ever commenting on it. And now they can use the same reasoning they used in the last two JW broadcasting videos, the annual meeting and governing body update number 2, to say the governing body has decided, and we've been studying and we've really been digging into the book that was made for us that we've had all along, and voila, tattoos are a conscience matter. Why? Because it's easy to give back to the people. And it doesn't impact any of their doctrines. Nothing. And might I add, most importantly, they can't be sued for changing it by past Jehovah's Witnesses. And I think that's a key with my prediction of both birthday and tattoos. These are things you can give back as perks, and the pattern seems to bear that out, that won't get you sued. And even those in the past can't come back to haunt you. They can simply say, you wouldn't let me do it. Well, there's been new light. And look, I have to say it. While Jesus compiles a database of child abusers inside Jehovah's Witnesses and allows them to continue to be around children of Jehovah's Witnesses, he has been hell-bent on making sure Jehovah's Witnesses don't get tattoos or body piercings. Isn't it weird? They've stuck by it for decades. Certainly no one that wanted to be a pioneer or an elder or ministerial servant could have a tattoo or multiple body piercings. All the while, they admit that the tattoos prohibited in the Bible were tattoos attached to false religion in the Old Testament. They weren't a pretty butterfly. They weren't a flower. They weren't a sleeve of your kids or your kids' names. They had nothing to do with that. Tattoos in ancient times were immediately tied to surrounding nations who weren't worshiping Jehovah. And it's incredible how they've held to this tattoo ban, much like the birthday ban, for all these decades. Meanwhile, they got pedophiles running wild. It just blows your mind. From the Bible Questions Answered, page 50, what does the Bible say about tattoos? We get this nugget of Holy Spirit. Quote, the Bible's answer: the Bible mentions tattoos just once at Leviticus 19:28, which says, you must not put tattoo marking upon yourselves. God gave this command to the nation of Israel, thus setting them apart from the neighboring peoples who marked their skin with the names or symbols of their gods. There it is. Back to the quote, while the law given to Israel is not binding on Christians, hinting at a conscience matter, the principle underpinning the law is worth serious consideration. End quote. And let me just say this, in the culture of Jehovah's Witness, so serious was the consideration that you can forget it. If you had one, it was visible, or you went out as a baptized witness and got one, thinking you would ever have any privileges in the congregation. You may want to tattoo your grandmother's name on your arm, but that is somehow just as bad as getting a tattoo of a false god, a Canaanite god. The Bible condemned worshiping other gods in the Old Testament, including marking your body up with their names. Imagine that. All in a set of laws that no one is required to follow anymore. But Jehovah's Witnesses believe tattoos are just bad for everyone. They have mostly enforced this by means of shaming people. And I mean to tell you, shaming them. And shaming people, incidentally, is a pattern the governing body has been using successfully for many, many decades. How about an example? The From Our Readers section in the Awake of October 8th, 1995, we get this letter from a mystery sister, imagine that, who took the time to write in. And do you always notice, by the way, as I read this letter, do you always notice that these letters sent to the society were only a paragraph long? A paragraph, like 3-4 sentences in length? Couldn't be made up, right? I mean, I always write a letter that is only 2 sentences long and put it in an envelope, put a stamp on it, and throw it into the mailbox, don't you? But nonetheless, put that aside. We here read that this sister, the mystery sister, is so happy to have read the article, Young People Ask, fads. Should I jump on the bandwagon? From the December 8th, 1994 issue of The Awake. She goes on to write one of those famous one-paragraph letters and sends it, and it says this, quote, 6 months ago, I jumped on the fad bandwagon and hopped off with a tattoo on my ankle. Every time I look at my ankle, I'm reminded of my decision. Thought that was the point. I can only wonder what doubts others might now have about my character. I also worry if I might be a cause for stumbling to others in the congregation. I'll think more carefully next time the fad bandwagon pulls around. End quote. Mystery sister initials SC from the United States. I just picture them back in Brooklyn during this time period, Bethel, popping open the letter. It's three sentences. And thanks for sharing. I mean, why are you telling us this? It couldn't be that this is fabricated, could it? I wonder where this mysterious SC sister is today, don't you? I really wonder. But just imagine the stress she and many like her has undoubtedly endured every time someone is checking out her ankles. That's got to be highly uncomfortable. Because when you're going to people and promising them that they can live forever on a paradise earth with a pet cobra and a perfect body, their first reaction is to usually, I don't know, check out your ankles. Check out her ankles. There's a heart on it. There's a butterfly. Oh, wait, this has now been solved, SC, and all sisters can cover those ankle tats with a pair of pants now. I don't know what I'm thinking. That probably doesn't apply anymore. Those pants will cover those ankles. But nonetheless, there you have it. Tattoos among Jehovah's Witnesses sent other people into tailspins, including them questioning your character, including the chance that you're stumbling people right out of the congregation. That cute little heart tattoo you got on your ankle is now getting people killed. That's right. They don't want to be a part of Jehovah's Witnesses because of that tattoo on your ankle. I mean, come on. You show up at a book cart telling me I can live forever in perfect health, but I noticed you have a tattoo. Deal breaker. You must be a liar. You have a tattoo. I'd love to live forever, but you have ink on your arm. I'll keep walking. Can't listen. Bye. I mean, this is the type of reasoning that the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses has been promoting on All Things Tattoo for decades. It's just too funny, and that's why I think they're going to give them back. And I knew many Jehovah's Witnesses who took to getting tattoos in places that they could cover up for the meetings. It's going to get easier now with the pants, right? Brothers might have trouble with those neck tats. They're going to have to button up and wear that tie anyway, huh? Oddly, not one of the tattoos I knew of on some of those people that I thought were great people were actually of false gods or demons, by the way. I want to clear that up. But they got them. And then they proceeded to hide them when they came to the Kingdom Hall. And somehow the governing body must have found out. That's right. If you think you can hide your body from nine guys in New York, think again. What do you mean, Stacy? You're really rambling this episode? Check this out. From The Awake of September 22nd, 2003, pages 25 through 27, the article, Should I Get a Tattoo? We get a warning, folks. And it's by means of Holy Spirit. Quote, true. Some youths have had their tattoos placed on hidden areas of the body. Even their parents may not know about these secret tattoos. But beware. An emergency trip to the doctor or simply taking a shower at school could make your secret common knowledge. Better it is to conduct ourselves honestly in all things, avoiding foolish deception. End quote. Oh, no. How did this happen? The doctor told me to turn my head and cough, and oh, looky there, he saw my tattoo. Maybe I shouldn't be getting a physical anymore? I just stumbled my doctor. Now he won't listen to my message on living forever. If he agrees with nine guys in New York. A damn tattoo lost me a Bible study. I wonder if he noticed I was circumcised. Why do I get the feeling that those repentant Jehovah's Witness teens who had a secret tattoo stopped taking showers after PE class in high school? Body odor and sweat was the risk you took to not stumble someone who might see your tattoo in the high school locker room. As a JW male, that would probably keep all those evil worldly girls away from you as well. So it's a win-win, I guess, by the governing body standards. You see, my tattoo kept me from showering, which kept me from dating, which kept me from fornicating, because I stunk hiding my secret tattoo. You just can't even make this stuff up. And look, I guess I'm in a mood, but this stuff is right there on the pages of their literature. And my God, is this stuff dumb. I've added all things tattoos and piercings to my list of predictions of new light soon to debut in God's organization, and with that, you can probably see why. And I base it all on recent patterns in the governing body's decision-making prowess that's been on full display. This is easy stuff to give back. I want to keep emphasizing that. It highlights their benevolence, how kind they are. It makes them seem less culty to the media, to those who are just being exposed to Jehovah's Witnesses. And let's face it, if they don't like your tattoo, you're just going to be quietly relegated to just an everyday publisher anyway, and they won't give you any privileges, you know, like running microphones or giving symposium talks. Ladies, well, the literature goes on to question your modesty. Did you know this? The same article says, quote, "Many have come to regret making permanent alterations to their appearance." "I got a tattoo before learning about Jehovah," relates Amy. "I try to keep it covered. When others in the congregation happen to see it, I feel embarrassed." The message? Think before you ink. Don't make a decision that you may regret later. End quote. There it is. The Holy Spirit has spoken. Think before you ink. How cute. Didn't Jesus say that? Was that a quote from Jesus? Never mind. But if they're consistent, I believe tattoos are about to make a debut in Jehovah's Witnesses, and I think they're going to be on full display. We're already seeing beards. We're seeing pants. Pretty soon, we're going to see some really nice tattoos. If you got them, flaunt them. And can you imagine? Have you pictured what is about to happen if Jehovah's Witnesses are indeed told that tattoos and body piercings are a conscience matter? Have you even stopped to think about this? I'm bracing for the tattoos we are all likely about to see. I've already pictured the JW letters in blue ink on some brother's shoulders, a publisher's favorite New World Translation scriptures across their back, Paradise Earth scene sleeves up people's arms, and of course the word Sodom with an arrow pointing down, crossed out in red on the lower backs of those that are now apparently going to be resurrected from Sodom and Gomorrah, permanently making their change of heart and sexuality. No more butt play in paradise. Why not commemorate it? Okay, I realize I'm out of line. But I don't know if I'm reaching on this one. But who wants to be the first person to get tatted with illustrations from my book of Bible stories? Or maybe you get the bearded face of Jeff Jackson or Mark Sanderson on your forearm. It's coming. Make no mistake. This kind of stuff will happen if Jehovah's Witnesses are told the tattoos are a conscience matter. And I don't have any tattoos, and I realize I'm in the minority. Most of the people I love or that I'm surrounded by in life all have tattoos, and it's my belief we are going to soon see Jehovah's Witnesses proudly displaying tattoos, all within the blessed guidelines of the governing body. How about a third prediction? One more for the books. I'll try to pull it together and be more serious for a few minutes. I'm going to throw in one more change or prediction that I see coming, and I've seen it coming for a very long time. This one goes a little deeper, and it's one I've debated with many Jehovah's Witnesses and actual ex-Jehovah's Witnesses as well. And we always tend to land in the same spot on this one. It's this. I believe the 1914 doctrine is about to be changed. I actually think that there's a small possibility 1914 and all that it meant to Jehovah's Witnesses could disappear altogether. I've been watching their pattern on this, and it's been changing. They've been changing it for years. I truly believe they've been laying the groundwork to change the 1914 doctrine for, I'd say, roughly 30 years. I actually believe this was going to change during my time as a witness. And I was a Watchtower study conductor for 8 years at one point, and I kept looking for it. 1914 is a laughably stupid teaching that is painfully easy to disprove. And they've been laying the groundwork for making it all go away for a long time, and they've been doing it right under the noses of Jehovah's Witnesses. Our brains are trained to see patterns, but they can also be trained away from seeing patterns. I'll say this. At the risk of alienating younger listeners, I can only say that back in the day, and again, I'm a kid of the 70s, 80s, 1914 was everything. I think I knew the number 1914 before I knew my birthday or even my phone number. That's how much it was emphasized when I was a kid. It was part of every meeting. The number 1914 was drummed into our psyches. So prevalent was all things 1914, the most Jehovah's Witnesses who leave are in absolute shock to learn it was all fabricated with lies and bad math. Oh, and the entire concept of 1914 itself was actually ripped off from the Adventists by Chuck Taze Russell to begin with. And I'm going to admit something, I'm chucking myself under the bus on this one. I too never investigated 1914 and all that it meant during my time as a Jehovah's Witness. I was guilty of just flat out accepting it. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to look back on, period. From the 1984 Watchtower, May 15th, page 7, the 1914 articles, "The Generation That Will Not Pass Away" is the title. We are told, quote, "Yes, you may live to see this promised new order along with survivors of the generation of 1914, the generation that will not pass away," end quote. Watchtower 84, May 15th. Bold comments, and they were repetitive in pumping 1914. And isn't it something from the 1984 Watchtower where they did a series? What a bold comment. Considering the time of the printing of that article, someone born in 1914 would have been reading it at 70 years old. And this was all part of a 4-issue back-to-back set of Watchtowers with all things deep dive studies on 1914 in the year 1984. I was a junior in high school. But that didn't stop them. 70-year-olds going, wait a minute, this generation isn't going to pass away. I'm 70. The entire religion of Jehovah's Witnesses has revolved around this date. And for almost 30 years, they've been slowly backing away from 1914. Have you seen the pattern? I recognized it many years ago. I was still a witness then. And let me say this, without 1914, you can't get to 1919 when Jehovah's Witnesses are told Jesus chose them out of the lineup of Earth's religions to be his one and only. I could sit here for another hour quoting from their literature on all things 1914, but they've been backing away and it's subtle. Unless you've picked up on the pattern, you may not have noticed it. They slowly stop talking about something they're going to let disappear. It's very rare to hear them mention 1914 during JW broadcasting anymore. And the marathon Watchtower studies on 1914 have all but disappeared. Think about it. I dug around a little. I didn't spend a lot of time, but in looking at the online library, it looks like the last significant study of 1914, and it was only 2 or 3 paragraphs, was in 2022. And before that, it looks like it was in 2014, 2015. But you'll notice the emphasis on 1914 slowing way down since the 1990s. But one of the most egregious examples of this pattern, is in the Awake magazine mission statement fiasco. I'm sure most people are aware of this. But you talk about taking a pattern, breaking the pattern, and subtly swaying minds in a different direction. There may be no finer example when it comes to 1914. From 1991 to October 22, 1995, the inside cover of the Awake featured this mission statement. Quote, "Why Awake is published Awake is for the enlightenment of the entire family. It shows how to cope with today's problems. It reports the news, tells about people in many lands, examines religion and science. But it does more. It probes beneath the surface and points to the real meaning behind current events. Yet it always stays politically neutral and does not exalt one race above another. Most important, this magazine builds confidence in the creator's promise of a peaceful and secure new world before the generation that saw the events of 1914 passes away." End quote. Then, without explanation, and for those not taking real heed of their patterns, this happened. November 8, 1995, all the way up till December 2001, the mission statement inside the Awake changed. It reads like this, quote, "Why Awake is published Awake is for the enlightenment of the entire family. It shows how to cope with today's problems. It reports the news, tells about people in many lands, examines religion and science. But it does more. It probes beneath the surface and points to the real meaning behind current events. Yet it always stays politically neutral and does not exalt one race above another. Most important, this magazine builds confidence in the creator's promise of a peaceful and secure new world that is about to replace the present wicked, lawless system of things." End quote. Wait a minute. I've been a baptized witness for decades. What happened in 1914? Right under their noses. Our noses. I was there. Aside from those examples, the change to generations, I won't spend the time in the introduction of overlapping generations in the 1990s, was, in my opinion, and I was the Watchtower study conductor that led that study, in my opinion, that was the beginning of the end of the 1914 doctrine. That with each passing day is proving to me that the governing body is nothing but a bunch of not-so-smart men. And it's funny, once you're out, you take a closer look at the patterns. Ray Franz, who most of us will know, was a governing body member and then left and was disfellowshipped. In his book, Crisis of Conscience, which I cannot recommend enough, page 256, Ray relates a conversation that he had while a member of the governing body. A governing body who was quickly realizing in the mid-1970s that the whole 1914 doctrine and the generation that would not die before Armageddon came had really painted their asses into a corner. A corner that in 2024, I believe they're now desperately trying to make us all forget about. On page 256 of his book, Ray Franz says this, quote, "The leadership had many numerous adjustments and now had few remaining options. There was the 1957 starting date for this generation proposed by members Schroeder, Klein, and Suter, but that seemed like an unlikely choice. There was Albert Schroeder's idea of applying the phrase to the anointed class, an idea that had been floating around the organization for many, many years, which offered certain advantages. There are always additional persons, some fairly young, who each year decide for the first time that they are of the anointed class." End quote. Much to unpack here. I won't take the time. But for those on the fence among Jehovah's Witnesses, Crisis of Conscience gives you a peek into just how Holy Spirit directs the governing body. Just a bunch of barely educated guys kicking around ideas about our lives. I got an idea. Let's try to tell them that when Jesus was sitting with his apostles overlooking Jerusalem, and he said the generation wasn't going to pass away before Jerusalem was destroyed, what Jesus was really telling his fishermen apostles is that it was a group of people in the 20th century watching these things called televisions in black and white as a satellite was launched into outer space. You know, fellas, the dark night sky with those twinkling things. That's what Jesus really meant, according to the governing body. It was up for debate. The Sputnik launch in 1957. Let's start the generation there, said Albert Schroeder. But can you imagine the apostles' response if this is what Jesus really meant? Hey, Lord, what's a satellite? I'm glad you asked that, Peter. Put down those fishing nets. Sputnik 1 will be the first artificial Earth satellite. It will launch, into an elliptical low Earth orbit by the Soviet Union on October 4th, 1957, as part of the Soviet space program. It will send a radio signal to Earth for 3 weeks before its three silver zinc batteries are depleted. That's it. The governing body has sat around debating when generations began and end, and they've debated our lives, our futures, openly. And at one point, according to Ray Franz, the governing body sat around realizing that 1914 had painted them into a corner, and they were trying to move the generation to 1957 with the launch of Sputnik. Ladies and gentlemen, behold the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. And so for me, sitting back now, 1914, generations, the last days, all of those concepts that I grew up in, they're all changing. Is anyone shocked by this? It's a pattern. It's a pattern that goes back many decades. And well, in my opinion, they've been strategically burying it, subtly. Their thoughts and their teachings on 1914 are as strong a pattern as I've ever observed with the governing body. And I'm boldly predicting that it will virtually disappear very, very soon. It's almost necessary that they bury this soon. I've never seen the different faces on the governing body over the years to be particularly smart guys. They seem to be a little slow to the game, even with their own patterns. But remember at the outset when I mentioned VUCA, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. They may take a while, the nine guys that is, but they still employ age-old techniques to keep people engaged when they finally land on a decision. I've had this discussion with so many people in the past. Many are passionate that they'll never change or even abolish 1914. I disagree, obviously, and then I point out to them they already have. They already have. Like almost everything in Jesus' favorite religion, they make a bombshell announcement, see governing body update number 2 weeks ago, and then they stop talking about it. Most of the generations that lived or died with all things 1914, they're dead. Or they're aging, including me. Stop talking about it. That's what they do. That's what they do. That's their plan. It's much like the oral sex ban of the 80s. And going even deeper back when they used to promote blood transfusions only to switch that. Or when they celebrated Christmas and then they switched that. Or. How about just the history of 1914 itself to recognize the pattern? Do many Jehovah's Witnesses realize that prior to 1914, Jesus' organization was teaching people the following about his favorite date? It went something like this. The last days actually began in 1799. Jesus' presence started in 1874. Jesus started ruling in heaven in 1878. The Gentile times would then end in 1914, resulting in the obvious. the end of Armageddon, the fall of false religion, the end of all politics and earthly governments, heavenly and earthly resurrections, and finally a paradise on earth. Does that pattern sound familiar to a Jehovah's Witness in 2024? None of us listening in were alive prior to 1914, so we weren't personally impacted by those first rounds of 1914 teachings. But surely you recognize their pattern, because they've been using the same pattern for the past century, a pattern so succinct and so steady that I would bet my life on it. 1914 stayed the same, but everything around that year has changed, including generations. It's truly fascinating when you're sitting down to make predictions of things that you believe are about to change in this insane organization. It's fascinating to look inward at our own habits, our own tendencies, dare I say it, our own patterns. The governing body, in their own version of VUCA, have leaned into human behavior. It's what cults do. And to quote Ferris Bueller, one of my favorite guys, life comes at you fast. And we will soon forget things in favor of getting through another day, another year, another decade. Teachings like 1914 quickly become forgotten history. You see, it's human nature. It's a break in the pattern, because they know how to break the pattern. Slowly. And for that reason, I think 1914 will dramatically change. It already has, or disappear altogether. I have so many more predictions, and a bit of a fired up episode, a bit of a rambler. These are just three of my personal predictions of things that we will soon see happen within God's only organization. I want to let you know that I can confirm I did not pray on them, nor was I directed by Holy Spirit during this episode. But I believe most of these new light changes will show up quickly. If the pattern holds, we have the district convention season coming just months away, followed by the annual meeting just months away. Both of those are excellent venues historically used to announce all the changes Jesus is making to his organization. And I must note, without taking any responsibility nor any apologies to past generations of precious souls who wasted their lives, all in the name of new light. For any Jehovah's Witness listening, I encourage them to clear their mind and lean into your current belief that you personally were made in God's image. It's all right under your nose. It's just above your new beard, or a little farther above those new pants you sisters just bought for the next meeting at the Kingdom Hall. It's right there. Look at the pattern. From the article I mentioned at the outset, Benefits and Tricks of a Power Skill, Seeking Patterns, it makes this comment, quote, "Our brains are very good at seeing patterns. The ability to see patterns is a result of the brain's natural tendency to find order in chaos. This is how we make sense of the world and learn in the process. The ability to find patterns is also critical for survival, for it is what allows us to identify potential threats and opportunities." End quote. For anyone that's listened, certainly a Jehovah's Witness that has stayed and listened to this crazy episode, you have the ability to find order among this chaos. You were born with the ability. Leaning into a quote, I love my quotes, from Tony Hillerman of Coyote Waits, a novel, he made this comment. He says, quote, "From where we stand, the rain seems random. If we could stand somewhere else, we could see the order in it." End quote. I encourage anyone listening to just take a few minutes. Stand outside the rain for a moment. you're part of the pattern. I want to thank you for listening this week, putting up with my nonsense and rambling. Those are my three predictions. Until we meet again, wherever you may be well.